Episode 23 of Speak Beastie for November 6th, 2016.
I'm Ariel.
I'm Shannon.
I'm Eleanor.
Today we have a special guest, Lane. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Lane.
Hi. Well, I'm originally from Florida, but I currently live in Nebraska. My Hogwarts house is Hufflepuff, and my Ilvermorny house is Thunderbird.
Oh my gosh, yayer.
Yeah, it's pretty much the best. I mean, how can you go wrong with those? I've pretty much been into Harry Potter forever.
Okay, cool.
Almost as long as I can remember reading. I've been reading Harry Potter.
First word you ever wrote. Oh, man, I screwed up. You ever read.
Oh, man.
I can't. Words. First words you ever read were Harry Potter.
Ah. I mean, I know I read other stuff earlier. But like.
No. Let them think it was Harry Potter.
I mean, I just didn't start reading until I was 9. Was a late bloomer.
And then once you did, you just couldn't stop with Harry Potter.
Yeah. In fact, that's the only thing I've ever read.
You're not even reading this doc right now, because you're like, it doesn't say Harry Potter, so I'm just very confused.
Pretty much.
Well, we're happy to have you, Lane. It's been fun having you in the common room, and now we get to hear your lovely voice.
Yay! Yeah. The common room is super duper fun. I'm a huge fan.
Shameless plug.
You can be in the common room if you donate on Patreon.
Play the ad, Igor!
And now a message from our sponsor.
Stop the presses! Speak Beastie is on Patreon.com. With options ranging from $1 to $5 per month, you can become a sponsor of Speak Beastie and help us to bring you more from Newt's fantastic wizarding world. But wait, there's more! Rewards include access to bloopers and extended conversations. You can also help us decide on a discussion topic for future episodes. We want to thank all of our sponsors for helping us reach our first goal. Our next goal is to get merchandise. Check out patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more and become a sponsor today.
And now, time for the Phoenix Register. So we are getting so close to the movie that now it's kind of hard to keep up with all of the news that we're getting. So we're just picking and choosing the bits of news that we wanted to talk a bit about this week. The first bit of news we got actually has to do with the Fantastic Beasts speakeasy. It's revealed
speakeasy.
Yeah.
Don't you mean Speak Beastie?
Hey, that's the joke. That's the whole reason behind this whole thing. Not the whole reason. Anyway, so
we only made this podcast to make a pun.
Yeah.
That's fine.
I could talk about that for 5 hours, but I'm not going to. So, it was revealed that the name of the speakeasy is the Blind Pig. So, that's interesting. I don't know the significance behind that name. It kind of makes me a little sad, but...
It's especially interesting that it's not a magical creature.
Yeah, just a
unless there's pig. Some sort of magical story involving a blind pig. I don't know, but...
Oh, yeah.
Blind pig.
Maybe
was
it's related
the name...
to the hog's head.
Eleanor, let her speak.
I'm sorry.
Blind pig is like a general name for a speakeasy.
Okay.
So, oh, then so they got really, really lazy unoriginal. About it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a historical thing, I think.
Boo. We like originality in these parts.
Hopefully there will be blind pigs inside of the speakeasy.
No. No. I love pigs. I don't need them to be sad and blind.
They've just had old, happy lives. And so they've just gotten so old that they blinded with age.
Okay, that's okay. I just, like, I don't know. I've been watching a lot of American Horror Story, so I was thinking someone had blinded them. And that was not, I was not a fan of that has nothing to do with American Horror Story. It's just a crazy show, and there are sometimes pigs involved. Yeah, wow.
I know what you're saying.
Okay.
I'm with you.
I will admit.
You seem to be with me, Shannon.
My mental image of the blind pig was like the basilisk after he gets his eyes chopped out by Fox.
Why are you doing this to me?
That was just how I imagined that blind pig.
That's more like the eye-gouged pig, but yeah.
But he's blind after that.
Yeah. Stop blinding our pigs. Moving on. So we did get, because I can't deal with pig talk anymore. We did get a good glimpse of the speakeasy and the goblin gangster Narlach, as played by Ron Perlman, in the latest trailer, as well as a closer look of the character in the character posters that were released. But Entertainment Weekly actually released a new concept art for the speakeasy, which if you go to MuggleNut.com and the Fantastic Beasts film series tag, you can look at this article. Literally, take a look inside the Fantastic Beasts speakeasy. And if you look at the picture, it's really... I don't know what a speakeasy is supposed to look like, but it's really so different from all of the other images that we've seen from Fantastic Beasts, where it's all shiny and, like, beautiful and, you know, very 1920s Art Deco, and this is very clearly underground and hidden, but all the people look super fabulous in it, so it's just screaming 1920s in that regard. So I really like that, and I love how, I don't know if anyone else is looking at the picture, but the woman singing on stage and the guy looking at her just like clutching his chest like be still my heart.
It reminds me of a subway tunnel.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking.
It's got a very grimy feel to it. The
Did
production
you guys... Oh, sorry.
No, you're good. No, what are you gonna say?
Did you guys see the Google Maps thing?
No.
I saw that there was a thing. I didn't know about it.
I saw the article on MuggleNet that there's a landing page, and if you go into Google Maps, you can view locations.
Oh.
And so you can do like a street view thing of places in Fantastic Beasts.
Wow.
And there's one of them for the blind pig, and it's got kind of a closer look at it. And it's like, you know, those things on Google Maps where you can kind of go around and get a 360 view as if you're standing in the room.
Lane here.
I'm opening it.
With the news that I should have been covering.
Oh, God.
I didn't even know about this. I'm like, what? Oh, my goodness.
How do I use Google?
Right?
Oh no.
Oh wow.
The reason I missed this bit of news is because picture. I looked only under the Fantastic Beasts film series tag, not Fantastic Beasts. So whoops.
Yeah,
sorry.
I missed this.
Well.
Oh, that's so cool.
Oh, and I don't have an Android.
Macusa's like right next to Wall Street. That's interesting.
It's pretty cool.
Huh.
I like how it, for the blind pig, it starts you on the stairs outside and then you can go through the wall.
That's cool.
Let's just do this for the next hour. Forget about the rest of the walk.
Everybody just listens to us.
Wait, but like, where is everything? Because is the blind street, sorry, the blind pig near the meatpacking district?
Oh, that would be sad.
Like I know.
Oh, well, you guys are the Americans.
I've been to New York once, okay? Like, I don't automatically know anything.
It's near a place called the Spotted Pig, so...
All the pigs. At least this one's only spotted.
It is slightly south of the meatpacking district.
Okay. Washington Square Park. It's in Greenwich Village.
Well, if you want to do this yourself, be sure to look at the Fantastic Beast tag on MuggleNet. And the article is titled, Google Launches Fantastic Beast Landing Page. So very straightforward. And you can enjoy all the magical places in the Fantastic Beasts film interactively. The first interactive option allows users to use their phone like a wand by activating OK Google and using Lumos to turn on the flashlight, Knox to turn it off, and Silencio to mute the device. So that's really cool.
I think it has to be an Android device, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. The one time having an iPhone does not help you out. Actually, that's not true, but I'm not going to get in a whole debate about Apple, so...
iPhone Android politics is just too much right now.
I'll just use my boyfriend's phone. Problem solved. So, if we want to go on to other news...
Yeah.
Since there's really only a few other things to discuss, and we've got so much in the discussion... So, in other news, MuggleNet will be at the Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them New York City premiere.
Ooh.
So exciting.
So cool.
Unfortunately, you know, all of us can't be there because there's almost a million of us. Not really. That was hyperbolic.
almost.
But we will have two people from Speak Beastie who will be representing. Our own producer, Elena, and our own rotating host, Lizzie. Sorry, I just had a brain fart on the word. sorry, Lizzie. But the event is supposed to be pretty darn amazing. Had to censor myself there. Attending will be almost all of the actors from the film. Eddie Redmayne, Catherine Waterston, Dan Fogler, Alison Sudol. It goes on and on. J.K. Rowling herself is supposed to be there, so I don't know. I'm pretty jealous.
Oh, so am I. Why?
Yeah.
Why Australia?
Just fly on over. It's probably really cheap.
Totes.
But MuggleNet, yeah, MuggleNet will have full coverage of the event, so be sure to check out MuggleNet's Twitter, MuggleNet Live's Twitter, Periscope, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Snapchat. Seriously, it's going to be covered from all angles, and I'm probably going to be that person with popcorn, just looking at social media all night, pretending I'm actually there. So, hooray for that bit of news. So, also in news, we've got Eddie Redmayne, who brought some Fantastic Beast clips to EW PopFest. He was there with co-star Catherine Waterston, and they both appeared at the EW Pop Fest for four new clips. The first saw Newt Scamander arriving to New York. The second introduced one of Newt's many beasts to the screen. The third offered a look inside his mysterious case. And the fourth had Ezra Miller discussing a potential connection between the film and Gellert Grindelwald. The duo also talked about the film. And Catherine, I find this bit funny, she shared her... and the rest of the cast's amazement at the recent announcement that there would be five films rather than three. she said, when she said we were doing five, that was news to us. There's so much that we're not privy to. Eddie added, the thing is that it's Rowling's imagination. She has such a passion for it and a specific story that she wants to tell. And we get glimpses into that. And as Catherine said, it's insanely exhilarating when that happens. And I think that's their polite way of being like, well, we didn't know, and we just gotta play it off as best as we can. But I think to a certain degree, it's gotta be exciting as well. I know it must have been a shock, but hey, to know that the story is gonna continue and they're gonna have
a job.
Jobs. Yeah, that's good. That's always good.
Yeah.
So they talked a little bit about their developing relationship. Eddie explained, it's not love at first sight. Put it that way, maybe there's a bit of chemistry at first sight, but it's quite combative. But what was lovely was to play a slow build, to be able to play this kind of These characters are thrown into a world. This quartet together, Newt, Tina, Queenie, and Jacob, they're all outsiders in some way, and yet they have really heroic qualities within them. So it's kind of lovely for us to not rush that and be able to play it slow. So I like that they finally addressed Newt and Tina, which I know isn't common knowledge for the casual fan, mm-hmm. but for people who do have a copy of Fantastic Beasts or listen to the podcast, then they're like, yeah, Newt and Tina, they know. So yeah, it was pretty good to have them finally address that. In a way, I know it's still kind of vague, but he's not going to give all of it away before the movie.
It would be mm-hmm. interesting to know how many people don't know about it. I feel like that's just something that most of us have always, I mean, we read the book, so we obviously already knew that Newt and Tina were going to be together forever.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting for us. We know that that relationship is going to happen, but
yeah,
casual viewers won't have any idea. So it'll be fun to see what they think.
Yeah.
Definitely.
All right. Now on to this. So, as I'm sure everybody has heard at this point, the rumor mill says that Johnny Depp is set to star in the sequel to Fantastic Beasts. Deadline Hollywood was the first to break the news, stating that Depp will make a cameo in the first Fantastic Beasts film, which obviously is coming out on November 18th. They wrote, Depp will be making a cameo, but his character is being kept under wraps, so audiences will have to keep an eye out. So yeah, that's news. What does everyone think about that?
I think it's stupid.
And don't hold back anyone except for me.
Come, you have to.
Does anyone on today have like positive thoughts?
I mean, look, I can give the positive side if that's if no one else is up for doing that.
Let's hear it, Eleanor.
Okay, well, look, basically, recent events notwithstanding, he did some fantastic films. I used to be obsessed with Johnny Depp when I was a teenager. And I think some of my favorite films of his were like, lots of people love What's Eating Gilbert Grape. I loved The Libertine, which is a bit more raunchy as a film, I guess. But he displays some serious acting skill in that. So I'm like, look, he does have the capacity to be really good. So maybe with David Yates and obviously the fantastic writing by J.K. Rowling, there is a possibility that, you know, he could be good. Especially if he's cast as Grindelwald, which is a possibility, which I very not... I'm sure about. But yes, that's my sort of slightly positive take.
Maybe he won't be Grindelwald.
I hope he's not Grindelwald. Here's my like bare minimum complaint.
Okay.
Is that he's American.
Yes. Yes.
And if so, there was this whole thing where J.K. Rowling insisted, yeah. which we've talked about this before, for the Harry Potter movies, that they all be British.
Yep.
Which totally makes sense. We've talked before about how it's a little annoying that there's, like, no Americans in this movie that takes place in America. But Johnny Depp, if he's in it, because it's still not, like, confirmed, and I'm really hoping he's not, but if he's in it, he'll be American, and I doubt he's playing an American because it's only a cameo in the first movie, and then they're not in America anymore. And so, and then if he's Grindelwald, like, where's Grindelwald from?
I thought
no,
Eastern Europe,
like Germany.
Yeah, I guess
vague.
It might not be.
Well,
specified.
Grindelwald, this like actual like town is in Switzerland.
Well, okay. Regardless, they. Any actor who has been from different parts of Europe, you know, for Fleur Delacour, they got a French actress for...
Yeah.
Like, there's always been an authenticity, and you've never had to think, like, is that a fake accent or not? And I know with a few of the actors in Fantastic Beasts, like Colin Farrell and Carmen Yogo, who are British playing Americans, I'm so not bothered by that, but...
Yeah.
To have... someone who is American putting on an accent that is still to be determined.
And he's done, like, British accents before.
Yeah.
Like, English accents. Mm. Like, we know he can do that, but I don't know about Grindelwald.
Yeah, I am only going to say a little bit on the matter, because I have too many opinions, but I feel... And I read a lot of other responses from people who were also disappointed in the same vein that I was, because Harry Potter as a series and now Fantastic Beasts, they've never needed to rely on Hollywood names. Yeah.
Yeah.
The stories tell themselves, and any big names that were cast into the series, like Alan Rickman or Maggie Smith, they had the accolades to back up. And, mm-hmm. you know, to back up their success and their acting chops.
And they weren't even, like,
it wasn't
big Hollywood.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like somebody's names. Like, I'm going to see this Alan Rickman action flick. You know, it's not like, it's not Hollywood. Yeah. And they were good at their craft. And it felt authentic. Like, you know, they got this role because they were the absolute best for it. And I'm not saying Johnny Depp may not be the best for whatever role he's playing, but the fact that the past few movies he's been in have been utter and complete flops, and he's been playing
caricatures of himself.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, I read thank
this
you.
Like, or like my sister showed me this article or something. It was like this theory kind of thing that, like, Johnny Depp was meant to be an indie movie actor, and that's how he started. He did these small movies, and then he did Pirates of the Caribbean, and then he became like a movie star.
Yeah.
But that's just like not what he was meant to do, because he was meant to play weird small characters
like Edward Scissorhands.
But now he's a movie star and he can't go back. But like, I totally see that, where it's like, just the bigger parts he's done, the worse it has been.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I grew up with Johnny Depp, because my mom had Edward Scissorhands on, and we watched Benny and June, and she talked about one. You know, when he was in 21 Jump Street, and I used to like Johnny Depp, and for lots of various reasons, I no longer do, and that kind of taints the experience for me as well. That I just, in my personal opinion, think for many reasons they could have gotten someone else, and I hope if he truly is playing Grindelwald, I don't know. I hope I'm proven wrong, but at the same time, I have such personal opinions that it's really going to be difficult. So that's all. That's all I got to say about that.
I mean, he has been good, like, in like Finding Neverland.
Like,
you
know,
and stuff.
He can do crazy characters.
Mm-hmm.
But he can also do good characters, like, you know, Finding Neverland, like... That was not a crazy character. I mean, well, to an extent, but, you know, but, like, it was a much more, I guess, sort of straight role than some of the other stuff he's done. Also, he's done actually some, like, he's done a few, I think From Hell he was a relatively straight character. Chocolat he was a relatively straight character. So, like, he can do them, but it's just been a while since he's done something that's really good, I think.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
There are some crazy characters in the Harry Potter series, like Trelawney. She's over the top. And we don't know that he'll be Grindelwald. So maybe there's going to be some psycho crazy person in the next film who has some important role who isn't Grindelwald, who Johnny Depp would be suited for.
Yeah. I would definitely, if he's in it, I would definitely prefer that he's not Grindelwald.
Yeah.
What if he's a motion capture beast?
That would be perfect.
He'd also be a bit too old to play Grindelwald.
That's true.
Oh,
he's
perfect.
Like in his 50s. So it would be weird for him to be Grindelwald.
So that's it for the Phoenix Register for this episode. If you want to check out more news that maybe we haven't covered or maybe has come out since the episode, be sure to check out the Fantastic Beasts tag on MuggleNet.com.
Cool. So for today's owl post, our podcast question last episode, was about graves. We had so much to say about graves.
Yeah.
So let's see. Rosemerta responded. And she said, great podcast, Beasties.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Which you
are. On Graves, she said, I think he's going to be a really interesting, flawed character, partly indicated by the casting. Mm. In the trailers, Graves is clearly angry at the continued suppression of wizarding kind in America, and perhaps sees Grindelwald as a beacon of how things could be due to the call, magic is might for the greater good. Is he going to be an action anti-hero with a sparkly coat? I hope so. That sounds great.
Him in a sparkly coat.
She also said that she was at the London fan event too, and that we didn't mention the branded popcorn or goodie bag girls. I don't know what that means because
we weren't there.
We don't have Claire or Sophie. Yeah. So.
Blame them.
She was like, I'm glad JK was there, but not surprised. In fact, I would have been more surprised if she hadn't been there and thought it a shame that she only came out for the last 5 minutes. That's true. Okay, the next one is like, it's not really a spoiler, but she mentioned that she loves the Niffler's name, which we mentioned in the last episode. It's mentioned in the first 10 minutes of the movie.
And I refuse to believe it.
But she loves the Niffler's name, which is traditionally Scottish, so maybe that's where Newt found him, Scotland.
Okay, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, that'd be cute.
Aww.
Then she asked, do you think Credence looks creepy?
I think Ezra Miller is a handsome man, but that haircut is not flattering on him.
Yeah. Don't think it's supposed to be.
Yeah, no, I know, I'm just saying, like, I'm not just going to throw out the word creepy, but it's not a haircut I would advise for most attractive or even unattractive people. I don't know. Anyone. No one get that haircut, please. It's not.
She also asked, is Mary Lou going to be the Nomad Umbridge?
Yes.
Which I totally see.
Mary Lou. It always makes me think of the donkey in Holes. Okay.
I don't remember a donkey in Holes, but...
Yeah, Mary Lou, because he's like...
That's right.
I haven't read it in a very long time.
Because Zero's like, what's Mary Yellow? And Stanley's like, what are you talking about? And it's on the side of the boat, because the boat was named after the donkey.
Okay.
I got you.
Thanks, Shannon.
All right, next in the Owl Post. Thunderdoor says, I think Graves will be an anti-hero, along the same lines as Snape, a spy for Dumbledore against Grindelwald, perhaps. I could see Newt using his contacts he develops on his travels to help gather supports against Grindy.
Yes, let's call him Grindy.
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 So I think that's an interesting idea, Graves being a Snape kind of character.
I think we kind of discussed that in a way, or did we? Or was I just thinking it? I don't know.
I think maybe we drew a parallel to Snape, but we didn't necessarily think, oh, he could be spying on Grindelwald for Dumbledore or for whoever.
Okay. Yeah.
Which I think would be a cool idea.
I think it's interesting, but I would hate for it to just be a rehash of the Potter series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were protecting the boy this whole time. The boy being Newt.
Or the Niffler.
I'm okay with that, actually. The Niffler's the chosen one.
Graves has always been in love with Newt's mother.
Niffler's mother.
You're right. He's always been in love with Newt.
Man, this took a turn.
Last piece of Owl Post. Buckbeak is my spirit animal said, one of the things you didn't mention in the posters was Chadwick's charms. It's featured in Queenie's poster, and it's the set of charm books written by Chadwick Boot. I'm really glad the Pottermore stuff is showing up, but not super in your face.
Yeah.
Very observant. Buckbeak is my spirit animal.
That's me.
I did not notice that.
That's you?
I'm Buckbeak.
I feel like I knew this
before. Oh my god!
No way!
Oh, yeah. This makes so much more sense.
Okay. Like I'm meeting one of my heroes now. I don't know how to react. You can't drop that kind of bomb on me and just expect me to stay cool now.
That's how I felt being on the podcast. Aww, oh, now we're all in the same boat.
Oh my gosh, this is such a moment. So beautiful.
Oh god. This is amazing. Well, that was very observant of you.
Yeah, thank you.
You did a great job. I almost feel like usually we're like, yeah, good job, you, and now I can actually say it to you and you can say something back to me.
It's pretty exciting.
It's a conversation.
Wow.
I'm not used to this. Oh, man. The facade has just been completely shattered.
Sorry.
Every time now. Yeah, like,
I
don't know, like...
The third wall has fallen.
Oh, goodness.
Fourth wall. Why did I say third wall? The fourth wall has fallen.
The third wall.
I only exist in rooms with two walls,
sorry. Like a triangle area. Nice.
I'm gonna cry.
Just like shaped like the Deathly Hallows.
Yeah. That's exactly it.
The third wall has been shattered. There's just so many good options for the name of this episode. How is Elena gonna choose?
Oh, man.
And we still have to talk about 1920s France.
Yeah,
I know. Let's just skip it and ask Lane questions about all the comments that she's ever.
Yes,
What?
Can we have like a bonus episode where we just go through all of your comments?
Yeah, because right. I feel like you're on every episode because you're like one of the most consistent. Like commenters, everybody else is just going, yeah, I'm here sporadically, and you're like, no, I've got thoughts about this.
Yeah, I commented on Alohomora, but I came to Alohomora really late, like only in the last 2 years or something. And so I was like, oh my god,
that's
I missed
weird.
Out on, I guess that's not that late, but
yeah, I was like,
well,
that's
no,
weird
I,
that
I,
you're like in the past few years and you're like,
okay, scheme of Alohomora.
Oh well, yeah.
And actually, it was just a year. But yeah, so I commented, I would like listen through the old episodes, and I'm like, oh my god, I can't comment on this anymore, or it doesn't matter anymore. And so I was like, well, when Speak Beastie comes out, I'm not going to not comment on things.
Hell yeah.
And yes. I also have a lot of time to just be on the internet while I'm at work, so that makes it a little easier.
I feel like, I don't know, I'm really proud right now and I can't place why.
Just proud of how far we've come.
Yeah. Just like one little teardrop is going down my cheek. Oh. Like, I'm so proud. Not really, that was a dramatic situation that I made up, sorry.
Okay, I'm gonna wrap up the owl post.
Oh man, but it was the most... Monumentous. Is that the right
monumental.
Word I was looking for? Thank you. I was thinking momentous. Or is that a word either? Why am I an English major? What am I doing with my life? Anyway, it was a really great outpost. Nothing could ever top it. So there's Ooh. That.
Yeah, so that was the best outpost ever, but that is it for the outpost.
So, all right, main discussion. So what we're going to talk about is 1920s France, because that's where the sequel is going to be set. And 1920s in France, obviously we in English call it the Roaring Twenties. They called it Les Années Folles. And that basically literally means the crazy years. So it's sort of a time, yeah, like, anyway, so it's sort of
I love that.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. Anyway, like folly in English. Anyway, I won't get into etymology. I'll go mental. But yeah, and, basically, so I think just to give a little bit of, context. So obviously First World War just happened and France lost, about 5% of their male population in it. So about 1.3 million men out of 40 million strong population.
The population of Memphis.
Yeah. but yeah, and basically there were a lot of people also that, you know, didn't die in the war, but they sustained injuries or like very serious disabilities. There were also a lot of widows, a lot of orphans, and there was a major labor shortage. So when you have a major labor shortage, that means the laborers have more power over, you know, their employers. And so that's where you started getting, you know, strikes happening and people wanting, you know, rights like the 8-hour workday, which we now think of as sort of a, you know, like something that we take it for granted now. But that happened because there were so few laborers. They actually had power. So this was happening all over the world, not just France, but this was also happening in France. And this was in about 1919, 1920. And it also, I think, slowed France's economic recovery when the laborers were doing that. And that meant a lot of the French people didn't like communism because they associated communism with labor, which was slowing the economy down. So I'm sort of trying to get all this in, but... just there's a lot to cover. So basically, the other thing is that new technical schools were established. There was one hell of a lot of infrastructure to rebuild after the war. So, you know, war-torn Northeast had, you know, needed roads, railways, public buildings, homes, factories, farmland, like everything needed to be rebuilt, rejuvenated. Mines were flooded, and then, you know, production. In 1919 is actually only 57% of what it was in 1913 before the war. But by the time you got to 1923, it rose up to 87% of 1913. But so you're sort of seeing this rejuvenation, you know, economically, like across the country, like in the early 20s. So just trying to run through this really quickly. The other thing is they built a wall.
You're good.
So the France built a wall between them and Germany. They also expected that, Germany would like pay for everything.
I'm sorry.
So
this sounds familiar.
God. Yeah.
Walls make me feel anxious.
Yeah, I was researching this, and I was like, "Wow, this was 100 years ago." Anyway, yeah. I'm not going to say anything. but yeah, that was called the Maginot Line. Also, I think people were leaving military service; there wasn't as much pay to be in the military. And the other thing that was interesting, I thought, was that they thought that mechanized warfare was sort of utopian. There was quite a bit of, at the time, people weren't too sure about, like, you know, technology and warfare. Yeah, so that was kind of interesting. So that, I mean, that's sort of a very basic overview. But then you also have, like, so sort of what I was talking about before with, like, the German reparations. So you've got the Treaty of Versailles where Europe basically says to Germany, you're going to pay for all of our stuff, and Germany can't pay for it because Germany's been in a war as well. And then that meant that France thought that Germany could pay for their stuff, but Germany wouldn't be able to pay for their stuff. And there was a lot of crazy things happening where, you know, the government realizes debt, they increased the taxes because of the debt. And then there was, the people weren't happy about that because they don't like taxes. There was a new government which had more state control. And then there was a load of new governments in the 1920s because people were trying to deal with like the economic issues because there's sort of a lot of inflation happening. A lot of French people are moving their capital out of France. So, there, you know, obviously isn't as much money to tax in France as, so that's an issue. And then actually the banks got really annoyed at, I think his name is Herriot, who's one of the, prime ministers. They refused to lend because they thought the government was too communist for wanting, you know, to, tax everyone. I think I'm just, this is vaguely what I'm getting out of this. I'm just warning you, I'm not a 1920s France major. I'm just trying to cover it. But yeah, and then basically it was just sort of this sort of financial up and downs were really quite crazy, because we sort of think of the 1920s as like, oh, it was sort of a time of plenty. It was. There was like massive GDP growth for France, but there was also incredible uncertainty. And the other thing was that actually by 1926, so the government treasury in France was empty and the government couldn't repay its short-term debt. The France was at a new low, 50 francs to the American dollar. But that meant that there were a lot of Americans coming into France, a lot of people from all over the world coming into France because of this, the franc being so like low valued. And so, yeah, and actually what's kind of interesting is that I thought might be relevant to the Fantastic Beasts is that there were French who saw Americans as having plotted the francs fall, and there were a few attacks on buses filled with American tourists. I don't know if that's going to – I doubt it, but you never know. And actually one of the other things is that women were, like, going to department stores a lot to try and buy as much, like, durable goods as they could before their, obviously the value of their money fell too far, because it's just like a crazy sort of economic financial time. Anyway, then a conservative guy came in 1928, and he sort of stopped the franc from falling. It was at 20% of its pre-war value, which is, it's really quite an incredible drop. And then that's when the economy sort of started improving a bit. But then in 1929, that's when arguably the Great Depression and those impacts started hitting France. The Great Depression in France was much milder, I think, than the rest of the world. And also it went on for much longer than the rest of the world. So it's quite, so that's sort of interesting as well. So the French were enjoying prosperity, built largely by private initiative and partly by the government, having ended wartime restrictions. And so France's economy was benefiting from factory methods imported from the United States. And so you're getting this sort of globalization thing happening. So I'm just like trying to cover the economy, like all of that stuff. So more to the point, for the more exciting things, I guess, that people probably care about more is arts and culture. So, you guys probably know a little about, like, there was the lost generation of arts and writers after the First World War that went to Paris. So they were going to Paris, obviously, because of the lower dollar and all that kind of stuff. And all these incredible people were going to Paris. So there was, like, Man Ray, Dali, Jean Cocteau, the writers like Hemingway, Fitzgerald, Gertrude Stein. Paris was seen as, you know, being this, like, incredible nexus, like, of intellect, whereas America at that time was looking sort of, I guess, arid and narrow. Some of the American, like, black veterans, they found that France had a bit less discrimination than they were experiencing in the United States, and they brought jazz to France. So you're sort of getting, like, I guess what we're getting in the movie that we've got now is like with the speakeasies and stuff. I'm not sure if there's going to be too much of a connection with that or if we're going to follow anyone with that, but that's kind of an interesting thing to note. Of course, just obviously there were, you know, the people in France who also saw that jazz as a threat to white civilization because, you know, wonderful racist time of the world. And basically what was really happening with these artists and stuff is that surrealism happened, basically, and it was really about coming out of Freud's ideas about psychotherapy and about unleashing your subconscious mind and finding like the irrationality and sort of letting your imagination go in terms of that. And actually, interestingly, it sort of like influenced a little bit by Marxism. And they sort of hoped that the psyche had the power to reveal the contradictions in the everyday world and actually spur on revolution. So there's sort of an element of that. The other thing is that in 1925, the Exposition Internationale, I haven't done French in ages, des arts décoratifs et industriels modernes, which is the International Exhibition of Modern and Industrial Decorative Arts, that is how the name Art Deco, Art Décoratif, came about. And also there were obviously, I guess, sorry, I should mention the photographer Brassai was in Paris at the time as well. So yes, so covered a lot there. But anyway, so I don't know if you guys have any thoughts about how that and all of that's going to sort of fit into the next Fantastic Beasts movie. But.
No, I think you pretty much summed it up.
I think that was more history than I've ever learned about France.
Yeah, this is good.
I haven't really talked about women, but I think it should just be very quickly mentioned, like in the 1920s. So mm-hmm. women's fashion is going through a real revolution. Women were going through a revolution because obviously after the First World War, women had to survive on their own and suddenly they had a bit more independence and, you know, people started seeing them, especially with, you know, industry as well. Started seeing women as a valuable part of the workforce and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, you're getting to an extent, women's rights. And so they liked fashion. They had money. 1920s were an opportunity where women, you know, could cut their hair, they could wear makeup and perfume, they could smoke in public, they could dress in accordance with what they wanted. They abandoned corsets and big hats, which is I think that's a pretty incredible thing to do. They were trying to get rid of the constraints, but they're sort of remaining elegant. And, the fashion designers like Jean Lanvin, Paul Poiret, Coco Chanel, that all came in. And I think, not in France, but like Marlene Dietrich and all of that, they're sort of going on at that time where you're starting to have women sort of experimenting more with fashion. Oh, and the tie from the US came in to France in 1924. Just fun fact. Anyway, so yes, 1920s France.
Yeah.
I can definitely see a lot of parallels between France and the US, especially with all the women's fashion and arts and stuff. Mm. Mm-hmm. So I can see like the second movie having a very similar aesthetic to the first movie. It makes sense that you would go to France.
Oh man, I can't wait to see what Colleen Atwood does with the costumes.
Yeah.
What Mina Lima does with just the whole mm-hmm. aesthetic.
Oh, it's going
to
be so pretty.
Really cool. To see, because you always see in like movies about France and the lost generation about like the lounges with all of the most famous mm-hmm. authors ever, and they're all just in the same room. I feel like it would be super cool to like, oh yeah, Hemingway, he was a wizard. We just didn't really tell cool. you.
But I think it's also cool, like, some of these painters are doing, obviously, like, surrealism and stuff, and it's sort of like, well, maybe it's like they actually saw, like, something magical, and then they said, oh, that's my subconscious mind. Like, it's okay, guys.
That would be cool.
That
would be interesting.
I don't know. There's, like, a lot of interesting stuff. Like, it's just such a crazy time when I was researching it. I was like, oh, my gosh. Everything's so uncertain.
Yeah.
But yeah, everyone's like so determined to sort of, you know, get out and live life as well. It's so really interesting.
And that's, I hope that like the movie takes place in the 20s because theoretically more time could pass.
Yeah.
But
I feel like they're probably leading up to what the Second World War.
Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, if the movie's starting to get into, like, the Second World War, like, Great Depression, then that's going to be dark. And I don't want that.
But if the series is about Grindelwald, it's going to be dark anyway. Yeah,
exactly.
She's plotting it up to 45, and we're going from 1920 New York. So that's 25 years, 5 years each. So that means this will be going from, I'm just guessing, 25 to 30 will be the second one. I mean, maybe 30 to 35, like, I'm not sure if they're going to be staying in Europe or what, but I don't know. If you just break it up, like, straight up, like, in time like that, I don't know.
Well.
Good stuff. Yeah. I don't know. It's so much good information, but I don't know, like, what to say about it because we know so little about the movie.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we... The fact that we even got the location now, we're like, oh, what can they possibly do with it? But we don't even know what's happening in the first movie to think, like, oh, well, where are they going to take it from here? So I think once we've seen Fantastic Beasts, then I definitely think this is something we can revisit because I would want to. I'd be like, oh, you know, what if so-and-so is doing this over there? Like, we can... put names to places and faces and whatnot. It's so much interesting information, and I've always loved learning history and learning about different time periods, and especially the 1920s, because it was such a revolutionary time period for women. And just, gosh, all of this, you really... I wish everyone could see everything you did for this, because when we approached you, we were like, hey, do you want to do main discussion? You were like, oh, I don't know. What would I even talk about? And then you come up with like 5 pages of the most in-depth, amazing stuff.
I should mention, I was a history major. This is kind of like my thing. Like, I do like researching, but
I believe it.
But too much fun. I don't know. I think it's good to just like have it like in mind as like a basis so that like when we're learning what's going to be happening in the sequel, like it'll be like, okay, like we know it's
going to be happening. It'll be interesting to go to France because that's obviously much closer to Grindelwald and whatever he's doing because he's conquering Europe.
Do you think there's going to be this big, like, you know, the shadow of they just went through a war and knowing that there's a lot of other horrible stuff coming out of Eastern Europe?
Yeah.
You think that'll play a big part?
Yeah.
Well, the other thing was that there were a lot of immigrants coming in. I think, did I mention that? From Eastern Europe into France at the time because of the labor shortage. And I was just thinking, well, like, I mean, Grindelwald's meant to be from, like, Central Europe, like Hungary or around there.
Yeah.
Like, maybe he comes to France... I don't know.
Yeah, I could definitely see like actually encountering him.
Yeah, but like trying to fit in with the immigrants or something. I'm not sure, but
yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah,
yeah, it would be cool to see Grindelwald at like a low point of power.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like he doesn't have a lot of followers, and he's still we've got like 20 years for him to cover.
I mean, Hitler at this time was he'd just been in the army in the First World War. He hadn't really done anything much yet, I don't think. So, yeah. It's an interesting time, like the calm before the second storm.
There's a storm coming, Harry. You like my Hagrid impression there?
So great.
I work hard on it.
It's beautiful.
I was like, was that Robbie Coltrane or Shannon Mickelson? I don't know.
Well, I don't know. He could be right here. So for today's time turner, we are also going to talk about history in the 1920s. I mean, as usual, but we're going to talk about U.S. politics. Because I know that all of our U.S. listeners just want to hear more about politics.
Yeah.
Before, like, I start getting into the details, I want to point out that, like, at this time in history, the, like, Republican and Democratic parties were kind of switched from what they are now. This was right before they, like, switched platforms. That was kind of happening for 50 years or so. So, like, the Democratic Party was about small government, and then they became about big government, and the Republican Party, vice versa. So that is, yeah, what was happening. So it was like in the 30s when it was more solidified into the parties that we have today. So the presidents in the 1920s were Warren G. Harding, Calvin Coolidge, and Herbert Hoover, right at the end. So I'm mostly going to talk about Calvin Coolidge's time because he will be president when Fantastic Beasts is taking place. But it's interesting. Warren G. Harding died in office, and Calvin Coolidge was the vice president, so he took over. And so he then was president for, I think, a year, almost 2 years, and then he ran for office again, and then he did not run for a second term, which he could have, and then he would have been the longest serving president. But he was like, no thanks. Which I was like, I appreciate that, man. So they were all Republican. The Congress during this time, it was Republican majority in the House and the Senate. Some of the first women were serving in the House and the Senate at the time, which is pretty cool. The first woman to, oh, I didn't write down, I think she was in the House of Representatives, was Jeanette Rankin from Montana. And she was elected in 1917, I think, which was before women had the right to vote. So that's interesting.
Huh. Impressive. You could be elected to Parliament that was even without voting.
Yeah. It's weird.
Okay.
But good for her.
yeah.
And she was in Congress at that time, like the beginning of the 20s, and then she, like, went back in the 40s. The Supreme Court at the time, the Chief Justice was William Howard Taft, who was president right before this. He's the only person to serve as Chief Justice and president. And I thought that was a weird trajectory, to be president and then be Chief Justice. But okay. Yeah. So some acts that were signed into law in this time, the Immigration Act of 1924, which limited the annual number of immigrants from any country to 2% of the number of people from that country who were already living in the U.S. as of the 1890 census. So this was primarily aimed at Southern and Eastern Europeans. It also severely restricted immigration from Africa and completely banned immigration of Arabs and Asians. So, well, we don't have that act anymore.
Wow.
a big one was June 2nd, 1924, Coolidge signed the Indian Citizenship Act, which granted all Native Americans who were born in the U.S. citizenship, which, good.
Yeah.
They should obviously be citizens. They didn't have the right to vote yet, but they're citizens. And that was in a big part, a lot of the stuff happening in the 20s obviously was as a result of World War I. So like a lot of Native Americans served in the war, and then it was like, maybe we should let them all be citizens because they died for us.
Wow.
There were the revenue acts. There were like three of them. He just kept lowering taxes. There was a lot of lowering taxes, and that's what the revenue acts all did.
It's like Price is Right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Coolidge spoke out in favor of African American rights a lot. He tried to create laws that prohibited lynching, but some people didn't like that. Racism.
Well, they're all dead now, right?
Again, yeah. Hopefully.
Oh, maybe.
Shannon, damn.
The racists
got a few vampires.
I would never wish death upon anyone, but I was just asking. with like the time frame, like, oh, they're probably no longer around, and you're like, yeah, hope not. They better hope they aren't.
I mean, they'd be really old.
Yeah, well, I'm that's sure just someone what I was from thinking. The
20s is still alive.
I was thinking mathematically, okay, gosh.
You'd have to be like over 100. Like, to be.
Yeah.
You'd have to be over 110 to have been, like, of age during this time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, like, if you're a baby, like, you don't give a about lynching. So. Babies are
the oldest inherently. The oldest racist. Living person was born in 1899, and she will turn 117 this month.
So she very well could have been around.
She's from Italy.
Okay, well, I mean, well, she was around, just not America, probably.
She eats 2 eggs every day, and that's it.
That's
and cookies.
It? That is not.
But I do not eat. Quote, but I do not eat much because I have no teeth.
Oh, well, that's sad. I thought she was, like, doing it to stay alive. I'm like, that's not. At what cost, ma'am? No.
This article's from 2 days ago.
Now I'm just sad. What?
Anyway.
Shannon.
So, yeah, Coolidge spoke out in favor of African-American rights. You know, this was like the beginning of the civil rights movement. And again, he was like, hey, they fought in the war for us. Maybe we should let them, like, do other stuff. And another big thing was the Kellogg Brand Pact. I'm not sure that's how it's pronounced. But they basically a bunch of countries got together and were like, hey, what if we outlawed war?
Yeah.
And they all signed this. And it worked really well.
Oh, bless their hearts.
10 years.
So
they get that little star for they tried.
Germany, France, and the US.
So that's some of what was happening. Do we think any of this could play into Fantastic Beasts? I mean, we know that there's a lot of like political stuff happening with the wizards.
Yeah. I am curious. I don't know if we've talked about this before, but how the Prime Minister and the Minister of Magic generally meet. I wonder if Serafina Pickery has met with Calvin Coolidge.
I think somewhere, I think it was on Pottermore, it said that they don't meet with the Muggle government at all.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Oh.
Do you think Nomash have, like, birth certificates? And, like, actual Nomash-type credentials?
Wizards?
What do you mean?
Like, you know, because I feel like the wizards were... Did I say, do Nomash have birth certificates?
Yes.
Yeah.
I meant, do wizards have birth certificates?
I was like, hey, so Lane, secluded. We still do.
But they're so separate. So do they vote? Do they take part in any of this stuff?
It's true.
I could see that, like, the vast majority of them don't.
But I wonder.
And then there's some people who are like, hey, maybe we should care about the Nomadges. Yeah. And everyone else is like, shut up.
It'd be like Mr. Weasley.
Yeah.
Those would be the kind of people voting in the Nomad elections.
That'd be awesome. He'd be like, oh, how does this ticket booth work? he would make all of the hanging chads. I looked up a teeny thing about like New York City politics, and the mayor at the time, oh, I don't remember his name, but he was really popular, but he was also incredibly corrupt.
I remember reading a little bit about him.
Right after, and at the very end of the 20s, he was actually. He resigned under pressure from someone who was running for president. I don't think it was Hoover, but
Jimmy Walker?
Yeah.
That was the mayor.
Yeah. But he resigned under pressure because of all of the controversy. But he was really popular because he was like a Jazz Age kind of guy. And he just made New York happy to be New Yorkers.
He was loose.
Yeah, but he wasn't like very effective. But he did introduce sanitation.
That's good.
That is something I'm good with.
Yeah.
At least he brought something to the table, you know?
It'll be interesting to see how the politics, what Edward Shaw has to do with everything.
So I'm on Jimmy Walker's Wikipedia page, and under the thing for scandal and resignation, the first line is, increasing social unrest led to investigations into corruption within his administration, and he was eventually forced to testify before the investigative committee of Judge Samuel Seabury. And Samuel Seabury is, this guy is like a descendant of the Samuel Seabury who appears in Hamilton. So, fun facts.
Igor, edit that out.
I know it was really important.
I'm just kidding. Unless you do, Igor, then it's going to seem like it's entirely my fault.
Okay, so that's it for the time turner today. Leighan, why don't you open the newt case for us?
So, in the newt case today, we have the Kraken. It's a Norwegian, Scandinavian type creature. A lot of the first accounts came from that area. The word origin, krake, in the Norwegian and Swedish languages means unhealthy animal or something twisted.
Yes.
And krake in modern German means octopus. So that's where it comes from. First mentions were in like the 14th century in a Norse legend. This guy named Orvar Otter, he encountered two kraken battling in the middle of the ocean. And from there, it became legend. The main legend is that kraken, or the kraken, depending on which version it is. Sometimes there's only one in existence. Sometimes there are more. Kind of depends on your original source. But it was created at the beginning of the world, and it is destined to live as long as the world exists. And a lot of the time, it's just sleeping on the bottom of the ocean.
Cool.
So, depending on who saw it, depending on who saw it, it is like maybe 50 feet, 100 feet, or up to a mile and a half large.
Wait. A mile and a half in kilometers.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
It is. A lot. 1.6 kilometers for anyone who's not American out there.
Great.
A lot of people.
So can I speak Pokemon Go?
Yeah. Yeah, you could hatch an egg walking from the length of the Kraken. It's so big that a lot of the time from far away it looks like an island. And sailors would think that they were approaching an island, but then it would disappear. And then they're startled because, oh no, that's the Kraken.
Worst case scenario. Not an island, a Kraken.
Its main thing is that it has giant tentacles, and it'll kind of like, I imagine it's like swimming upside down, and so its tentacles come out of the water first. And then it would wrap around your boat and pull everybody underwater.
You don't have to be, like, upside down for that. Like, you have pretty long tentacles. You'd be right.
That is true. I guess I'm just imagining, like, a me-shaped thing trying to do that.
I can't get this boat underwater.
Yeah, I would make it. One account said that its eyeball was 5 feet in diameter. With 2 foot glowing red pupils.
Oh, God.
So, not only is it gigantic, it's also glowing.
And it can fit through any 5 foot space.
Shut up. Go away. You had your turn to talk.
And if you think about how smart, like, octopi are.
Octopuses.
That's just octopuses?
Yeah, it's great. Sorry, I know a weird amount about this.
More than one octopus.
Yeah. I mean, they're like incredibly smart creatures. So just imagine a giant kraken that can just outsmart you all the time.
Yep.
I read a funny account. There was a bishop who on occasion, after returning to his own country after a short absence, saw an island offshore which he knew had not been there before. He rowed himself ashore from his ship, consecrated this new land in the name of God, holding a full mass on the shore. No sooner was he safely aboard his own ship again than the island, being actually a kraken, disappeared from sight.
No.
I've heard that story! Ah! Oh, yes!
Yeah, a lot of the earliest accounts, it was sometimes considered to be crab-like.
Yeah.
But then there's also a bunch of stories about either, like, turtles or whales that are so slow-moving that they have, like, ecosystems on top of their backs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so a lot of the kraken stories come from that also, and I think that's where that particular one came from.
Mm.
Yeah. Sailors found warnings from the kraken that if the water was too shallow where it shouldn't be shallow, then there's probably a kraken underneath you. gurgling bubbles and fleeing fish mean the kraken is about to eat you. Or just, like, rise up, but it's probably going to try to eat you.
Yeah.
And then, Makes sense.
It didn't eat the bishop, though.
It didn't eat the bishop. Maybe...
So that was nice.
I don't know.
I feel like bishop that's got a religious reason.
Probably. He's got morals.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, one more interesting fact about the kraken. So, its poop is apparently really tasty.
Oh, no.
And it attracts fish to it from its poop. And then the fish come and eat its leftovers, we'll call them. Wow. And then it just eats them, and then it attracts more. It attracts more fish from the ones that it just digested. So
I'm quitting.
I'm coming with you, Shannon.
Yeah.
If one of us goes down, we go down together.
Yeah. Well, at least now, science has pretty much agreed that the kraken is probably just a giant squid, which has is now a confirmed species. One interesting thing that I found funny, in 1735, when Carl von Linn, a.k.a. Linnaeus, the creator of the Linnaean classification system that classifies, like, all of animals, in the first edition of his book, or his work, I guess, he included the kraken.
Oh!
As a cephalopod, and in the next edition, he took it out.
Oh. Aww.
But yeah, so there are a lot of legit scientists and cryptozoologists who believed in the kraken. And they would get so many, like, credible sources through word of mouth to publish, and then it just became this giant myth that we know of. There was one guy who, in the 1800s, he wrote that 10 British warships that had disappeared because of the kraken. But then it was disproved because there were survivors, and they were actually just lost in a hurricane. Scientist was completely disgraced, and he died of starvation.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are we sure the kraken didn't get him?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe he was only eating kraken poop, and then he couldn't find it anymore.
Oh, no.
Gross. In 1873, the first giant squid was discovered. And in 2002, the first photograph of a giant squid was taken. The first video was as recent as 2006.
Yay.
And that was, like, of an adult as it kind of came up to a boat. The first video in its natural habitat was in 2012. So it's still a really recent creature to have existed.
Yes.
Yeah, so the giant squid is pretty much accepted as the kraken, and all of the, like, when it goes back into the water, it creates whirlpools that bring the ships down, but volcanic activity underwater could account for that. Yeah, and then, so we all know the giant squid in the lake at Hogwarts.
Yeah.
He's kind of domesticated. He saved Colin, put him back in the boat.
He eats bits of toast.
Yeah, that he ate some, toast.
It is but, toast, yeah.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
I thought he but, saved Colin's younger brother,
Dennis. Oh, yeah, 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 you're right. He saved Dennis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, that is not compatible with real life. They only live in salt water, and they live in really deep water, so the pressure difference and the sunlight would mean that the squid probably wouldn't survive in the lake at Hogwarts. But we know
it's a magical squid.
We know that like Durmstrang made a magical portal into the lake. So maybe there's always a magical portal and the giant squid just goes out to the ocean.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then J.K. Rowling thinks that squid are probably magical. And then just to be terrifying, ichthyosaurus bones were discovered in patterns similar to the way that octopus modern octopus place the bones of their meals.
Oh,
and
cool.
one ichthyosaurus was discovered, the rib cage showed signs of constriction as if a large tentacle had wrapped around it. Ichthyosaurus are like 30 feet long, so it would take a really giant squid to catch it. So it was probably the Kraken. And maybe it's still asleep on the bottom of the ocean.
Ah.
So cool.
That's one place Kraken's I'm not going.
Dinosaurs.
Yeah.
That should be a Fantastic Beasts movie. They're just on a boat.
Oh my
and
God.
And they have to fight the Kraken.
Isn't that like the second Pirates of the Caribbean movie?
Yeah.
That's why Johnny Depp is in it.
Yeah.
You've done this before.
You'll know how to fight a Kraken again.
Maybe, like, Johnny Depp's in it for just, like, a minute, and then the Kraken eats him.
Yeah, that's possible.
I like that.
Is Atlantis? What if Atlantis is real in the Wizarding world? So cool. And so there's a movie set in Atlantis, and they befriend the Kraken.
Quite possibly. Awesome.
And I'm in the movie as a mermaid.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, I'm okay with this now. The Kraken's my friend. It's cool.
Yeah, bro.
I think it's like Percy Jackson. Kraken is in the Percy Jackson series. And it's a friendly Kraken, and it like gives them knowledge or something.
Dude, my favorite book when I was little was Witch Witch by Eva Ibbotson, and there was like...
Oh my God.
One of the... Really?
Yeah.
But anyway,
it's on my bookshelf right now.
Oh, I love it so much. But like one of the witches was trying to show like how evil she was by calling up the Kraken, except that the Kraken she called up was a baby and it was like, "Mommy." And I was it's so cute. And they had to keep it in the strictures.
Wow, I completely forgot about that. Isn't the cover of the book just a giant eyeball?
Not my cover.
Oh.
But I don't know.
Is it a 5-foot eyeball?
Yeah, it's pretty big.
Definitely.
Maybe I'm just misremembering.
I don't know. I'm not sure what edition mine is.
So today's podcast question is, what would you like to see incorporated from 1920s France history into the sequel? Comment, send us your fantastic theories, questions, anything. Answer the podcast question. And thank you, Lane, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you,
guys. This was so much fun.
Buckbeak is my spirit animal. The one and only.
Thanks, guys. This has been awesome.
I agree. And if you would like to be on the show like Lane was, be sure to head over to patreon.com/speakbeastie to find out how. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at Speak Beastie, Facebook at facebook.com/speakbeastie, Tumblr at speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com, and if you're over at our Patreon page, why not donate and get exclusive features and, you know, help us out so we can eventually have merch one day.
Yeah.
I'm Ariel.
I'm Shannon.
I'm Eleanor.
I'm Lane. Case closed.
Thank you.